The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
In Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights, at Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on The Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.
My dream would be that the audience really get passionate and say like, oh, you did this composer and I really want to hear it again and hear this music again, hear this composer again. And that is for me extremely important.
That was Stéphane Deneuve, the new music director at St. Louis Symphony Orchestra. I'm Jeremy Goodwin, and this is Cut and Paste, St. Louis Public Radio's Arts and Culture podcast. Stéphane Deneuve is a 47-year-old French conductor. He first worked with St. Louis Symphony in 2003, and he became an audience favorite over many return visits, in part because the guy is really friendly. He talks to the audience a lot from the podium. He loves to introduce pieces and talk about what the music means to him. He just likes to talk about music. In this new job as artistic chief of St. Louis Symphony, Deneuve follows David Robertson. He had been in that job for 13 years. I produced a radio feature on him that you can find on our website, but this changing of the guard is important enough, and he's fun enough to talk to and listen to, that we're bringing you an expanded version of our conversation for this month's Cut and Paste. Keep in mind, I sat down with Deneuve in his new office high up in Powell Hall, so this isn't a studio interview. It doesn't sound exactly like the typical Cut and Paste. I started by asking Stéphane Deneuve just how music first came into his life in a big way.
Well, I actually played a little bit of trumpet because in the north of France, where I'm from, there are a lot of amateur band, you know, wind band, and I learned a little bit of trumpet. And at the same time, I was going to a Catholic school, with an old nun that was playing the organ. And when I was 10, I was hiding to listen to her because I thought the sound of an organ was extraordinary. I was really enchanted, literally, by it.
And a church organ?
Yes, a church organ, yeah. And then we had a chapel, a church in the school, and it was a real organ, pipe organ. And she saw me, and then she said, like, well, maybe you want to learn piano. So I did, and then she noticed that I had good ears and that I had a little talent, I think. So so she asked my parents to send me to the conservatoire, and then it went from there on. But
how old were you at that time? You said 10?
10, when I started to play the piano, indeed. And I started quite early to conduct, because in this little conservatoire in the north of France, in Tourcoing, to be precise, near Lille, near Belgium, there was a director of the conservatoire who was a conductor himself and had a class for young conductors. And I was too young, but my mother insisted, saying that I was already very tall, and so that I would fit. And actually, I think to get rid of my mother mostly, he accepted to test me, and I was only 13. And I'm very actually happy that he saw something and decided to keep me. So I actually started to conduct and did my very first conducting in public the day of my 14th birthday.
So you remember standing up there conducting for the first time in front of people?
Yes, it was of course a small concert, but it was the day of my 14th birthday, the exact day, and that was a great birthday to conduct a student orchestra in a very short piece. But still, that's how I got the virus, I must say, and I decided to become a conductor quite early. I really kind of knew in me that that I would do that. I can now maybe reveal it. For very long, I thought it was too pretentious, but actually that I kind of never doubted I would do this art, let's say, or this this activity. I was quite sure from early on that that was my way.
Do you remember what What felt right about that experience?
From very early on, I really got the pleasure of sculpting the sound, of communicating the joy of music with people. I remember that I was a pianist and I felt a little bit lonely just playing the piano, and I wanted to do a lot of chamber music early on, and my wish was to share music with even more people. Then the orchestra was the right tool, and I really love this feeling that you feel so many different energies and you try to just put them together. It has been a very important thing for me from the start.
I have a quote from the New York Times here. What is it?
Okay.
I just want to get it right.
You did your homework.
So the New York Times describes you as a cheerful, garrulous Frenchman. Does that sound like a good description? Are you cheerful and garrulous?
I cannot first avoid the fact that I'm a Frenchman, because my daughter already now, she's 11 years old, and she's correcting my French accent. She said, like, Dad, because I do speak with a quite recognizable accent, I think. Yes, I think I'm cheerful too, actually. I'm very happy to be alive. I mean, the fact is, I have the feeling that this life that I have is a permanent bonus. My father was a construction builder. My grandfather was a construction builder. My great-grandfather was also a construction builder, and I was meant indeed to continue that and to... construction builder.
Construction.
Okay. Construction builder. You see, you're lost in my French accent. And I was certainly meant to have this life in a small town in north of France. And then suddenly, thanks to music, I have access to the capital city, first Paris, where I move very early on when I'm 18. And then I meet a lot of great artists, a lot of fantastic people. And then I start the career and travel the world, learn languages, Italian, German, English, a bit of Russian. And I find really that... it's an unexpected life, so how could I not be cheerful and joyful that I have this life? I don't know who to thank, but I thank something.
What are some pieces of music that you return to as a listener that are important to you?
It's very interesting because I'm not listening to music at all at home. I do not have a hi-fi system to start with, and if I listen to music, it's really to document myself, so to prepare a piece. I love to actually do some nerdy research about the very first recording of the piece and try to know the different options possible and different interpretative choices. So that I do, and that's how I listen to music. But I don't have the... It's very strange. I prefer to be in silence, actually, when I'm at home. And I hate, by the way, ambience music. I'm a nightmare in restaurants because I always ask the manager to just stop the music or to...
Oh, there's music in the background somewhere?
Oh, I hate that. Because I can't help to listen to the music, and then I cannot concentrate on the conversation or something. So it's really I leave the restaurant, and my wife says, "Oh, here you are again." When I say, like, okay, I need to go see the manager to turn down the music or do something, it's very difficult for me to not listen to music with attention. So, no, sometimes, very rarely, when I'm like jet-lagged or something, and I may sometimes listen to Bach, you know, Johann Sebastian Bach, the vocal music mainly, actually. And I have the feeling that if music was only Bach, it will be actually enough already. Such an incredible composer. And since I'm not conducting Bach, because it's normally more for... a repertoire done, I think, rightly with baroque ensemble, and I don't conduct baroque ensemble, so at least I enjoy listening to it.
So it sounds like your relationship with music is usually professional.
No, because I'm not professional. I love music only, so no, the relationship with music for me is more doing it. It's just that it's a physical process. I'm very lucky because I never stop to work, and I accept way too many projects. So so I work all the time. So I play the piano. I actually practice pieces, reducing on the piano the pieces, and I rehearse with orchestra and do concert all the time. So basically, music is just a permanent partner, but not really something that I'm passive with. I'm always actively listening or just doing it.
Do you think you could step back for a moment and describe just what the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra sounds like?
For me, the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra actually is a very interesting orchestra because it has a rich DNA and it has a special sound, which is for me very important. I love to meet orchestra with spice, with flavor, and they have a very American and Germanic sound together. I would say it's a big sound, by the way. It's very romantic, it's very vibrant. And what I enjoyed from the very start is a very sophisticated focus on the music making, really refined. So you would say, like, but every orchestra should be refined, but it's not the case, actually. You really can feel here something that is yes, very sophisticated and with a feeling of an old grand dame that has a lot of history in the sound.
Could you talk a bit about getting to know this ensemble and the give and take between you and the players?
It's a permanent process, actually. So I cannot really define that precisely. I also don't really think this way in a sense that I think that an orchestra should be a very flexible animal that can always change for each repertoire, and I love colors. So what I want is to try to adapt the orchestra to the repertoire permanently, and have the right feel. And at the same time, you will think I'm contradicting myself, but at the same time, I love that you work with also an orchestra that has its distinctive sound, and it goes together. I think it's the reason you can do many colors is because you start with the palette that exists. Then you can use the different color you have and create some new ones. So for me, there's no barriers. I mean, no limits to this orchestra. They are extremely virtuosic. I mean, there's also what I love. There's no problems, because you have some good orchestras where one section is really not functioning well, and it's not the case. This orchestra here is very homogeneous, very tight. Like, you feel it's a group that is very much together. It's a big family, really, and I love that feeling.
What are some things you want to do differently from what you've seen this organization do before?
I don't arrive here with the idea of fixing something, you know. I just arrive here to give what I am. You know, I'm not doing something thinking about the past. I'm just thinking of things, trying to be true to myself and to what I love and to what I believe in. And my main concern is to share with always more people the good news that music is. And so I really want to be very accessible in many ways, that entering the hall is easy, and we work on that strongly.
Entering the hall is easy, what do you mean?
That actually everybody feels welcome, that everybody, whatever background, whatever knowledge, whatever, everybody feels that it's their orchestra, and that they have a right to be here and to enjoy music, and also that they can afford it. So I'm glad that this year, for the first time, the access to a concert is the price lower to the price of a movie theater ticket. And I want as well to speak with people and to get to know them, and that they are getting to know me, and that they really feel that I am very open to them, and that I want to make music not only for them but with them, really. That it's an exchange.
That is Stéphane Deneuve. You're listening to Cut and Paste, and we'll be back after this one little message. Welcome back to Cut and Paste. I'm Jeremy Goodwin. I spoke with St. Louis Symphony Orchestra's new music director, Stéphane Deneuve. I asked him what sort of relationship he'd like to have with the audience here.
It kind of started already, which is very touching. When I say good evening, because I speak at the start of every concert a little bit, and just to face the audience first, because then I will turn my back for quite long. So I love to see them first and to just, you know, welcome them and, you know, change maybe some passive listening into active listening with a few words and sharing my passion, why I program the piece, what I love in this piece, whatever. And when I arrive and I say good evening, some people say bonjour and bonsoir, and that's already very nice that they vocally answer me to start with. And what I would like indeed is that people interact, that they communicate with me too, and that we feel just we are in a community together. That is my dream. I'm quite impressed because already now I have many stories of being in the supermarket here or in the street or in a restaurant and people coming and recognizing me, which is always a bit flattering, I have to say, but also, you know, feeling very at ease to introduce themselves and to say hello and I like that.
Well, in this business, there's a certain mystique around people who do the job you do, right? And not everyone who has the title of conductor or music director is so accessible to people on the street necessarily. But that just fits with your personality, I suppose.
It just happened that I personally love the contact, and yes, I don't want to be in my ivory tower and just, you know, be romantically distant, whatever. I feel sometimes that people do that to protect themselves from showing that they are not self-confident, maybe, you know. And the mystique of the conductor, I don't really believe in that, not today.
Let's talk about getting to know St. Louis. Do you stay in a hotel when you're here?
At the moment, yes, I'm staying in a hotel, and I'm commuting from Europe because part of my family is there, of course. So
are they in Brussels?
They live in Brussels, indeed. Yeah. Actually, in south of Brussels, in a city called Waterloo, which is a strange city for a Frenchman because it's one of the most famous defeats of Napoleon in Waterloo.
So I guess you take that ironically.
Definitely, yes.
The place from which you launch your successes.
Precisely. No, it's a nice little city.
So what do you do when you're here? How have you been getting to know the place?
So far, I have to say, I've been extremely busy. But when I was only a guest conductor, strangely enough, I had more time. So what I like a lot here, which I did, is visit the different institutions. I've been to the museums, especially, of course, the Pulitzer Museum, and I've been in the arch. Actually, I walk through the arch. I visited many.
Did you go up?
Yes. I did that.
How was that?
It's nice. Actually, it's a very beautiful view, and I was quite nervous because I do have vertigo. I have height fright, you say, you know.
Fear of heights, you might
fear
say.
Fear of height. And so being there, it's so small, you know. But I felt very good. And I love to eat, I'm afraid. So I've been to...
What do you like to eat around here?
No, I've been to many restaurants, actually, here. And there are some very good ones.
So do you come and you like want to go to the best French restaurants, or do you want to go to the local stuff? Like, where's the barbecue?
No. I like everything. I mean, it's actually maybe something in life that I have an appetite for everything. And I love very fine cuisine, be it French or anything. But I also like... you know, Uglylicious, you know this show, Uglylicious, like something that is both ugly and delicious. So I did enjoy at the game actually to have a good hot dog and a beer, definitely. And I intend to actually go to the Cardinals. They are doing great. So
I'll probably have you throw out the first pitch if you want to.
Mm-hmm. I think that's happening, yep.
Okay. You look excited about that.
Very. I'm scared to death, you mean. because it's very strange. I do not have stage fright at all. I'm very at ease to go on stage in front of thousands of people. That doesn't scare me. But I'm definitely out of my comfort zone if I have to throw a baseball.
But that's a challenge you're willing to take on?
Of course. You know, it's exciting.
For the good of the orchestra.
For the good of... yes, I don't know of what, but let's hope at least for the orchestra. Not for the good of baseball, for sure.
Have you attended any musical events outside of this building?
Yes, but classical music. I mean, I've been to a recital at Washington University, and it was fantastic role, by the way. I loved it. And I've been to some African-American churches where I heard some very good gospel singing, and I loved it. It was fun. And but I've not been to any pop concert or jazz concert yet, and I can't wait.
Well, there's a jazz club right across the street, as you know, at the Dark Room, and they are open after St. Louis Symphony Orchestra concerts. And I know this because I usually go over there.
Ah, I can see you there.
Yeah, often, oftentimes.
Very good. No, I will go. I mean,
do you think there's anything for you to do musically with people in jazz or pop in the city?
I have a good old dream, actually, which is to take lessons of jazz. You cannot really, I think, learn jazz. You have to do it. You have to play with people and just develop your own talent. But still, I would love to find somebody that could help me develop it. Because when I was young, I used to play quite a lot for my own pleasure, and some jazz. And I also played in a restaurant, even, when I was very young, to earn a bit of money. So I can fake it a little bit, let's say, but I would love to develop my knowledge of jazz and of the chords, and that would be a great thing for me.
What do you see as the role of contemporary music with this group?
For me, this is essential that we built a repertoire of the future. And I use the word repertoire really very precisely because, unfortunately, there is a big cliche that modern music is something that is difficult, intellectual, or dissonant, and a lot of people still believe that that music of today would be something that they have to suffer until they hear, you know, the real music. And it doesn't come from nowhere. For sure, especially since the Second World War, there has been indeed a certain avant-garde and modernity, which is now like more than 70 years old, that has put off a lot of people because indeed it was something difficult and not music even, I think. But this has changed tremendously. A lot in the world today, there are a lot of great composers who are writing music that is accessible, that is actually music, that is tuneful, that is melodic, that is very tonal. And what I want is that people actually realize that it's extremely exciting then to discover this new music and that they can love it exactly the same way they love a Tchaikovsky symphony or a Beethoven symphony or whatever. And so for me, it's very important to create a trust between the audience and myself that I love great music and that my selection of music of today is always the music that I profoundly enjoy and love, And if I may say, for the right reason, you know, for purely musical reason, for the pure pleasure of music. And I hope I can win a certain trust and confidence that that people are not scared or reluctant. And as my dream would be that the audience really get passionate and say like, oh, you did this composer and I really want to hear it again and hear this music again, hear this composer again, and him or her. And that is for me extremely important, just because it's weird that the classical music form is the only art form which doesn't have a really extremely successful production of today compared to the classics. I mean, if you look at literature books, I mean, or theater or visual art or sculpture, you, in all these art forms, you have the classics, you have the museums, and then you have the modern art museum, and you have the bestseller of today, and you have extremely successful creations, productions of today. Why would not be the same for classical music? I really don't know. So this is something that is for me essential, crucial.
That was Stéphane Deneuve. I'm Jeremy Goodwin, Arts and Culture Senior Reporter at St. Louis Public Radio, and this has been Cut and Paste, produced with help from our executive editor, Shula Newman. Our intro and outro music is by Eric Hall. You can find Cut and Paste at stlpublicradio.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.